supposed to be turning it up.
That's right. Turn up.
I want to apologize right now. I'm going to try and control my sniffing, and I have no idea how I sound in terms of the good old nasal quality. But for some reason, I don't know if it's allergies or a cold or whatever. Everything up in the region of my head is like completely blocked.
Mm.
I am trying the whiskey cough syrup method of fixing it.
Okay. It's an approved method of the We Were Gamers podcast.
Yeah.
Drink whiskey and cough syrup and hope everything works out.
I was just saying whiskey as cough syrup.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't think purple drink is a good idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know scissorp is the the approved head cold
cool
solution, but it solves something. That's
so we grabbed a bunch of listeners last week for BattleTech, and now the first thing they hear next episode is scissorp.
I mean, what's wrong with scissorp, Andrew? It's just, I mean, you know, Lil Wayne only went to the hospital twice for drinking it. It didn't seem like a problem to me.
Welcome back to We Were Gamers. What is this podcast, JJ?
72?
Oh, well, one? I just meant what is this podcast about, but yeah, I think it is 72.
Okay, yeah, I can count. This is a podcast where the two good friends, you and I, talk about how we used to have more time to play games than we do currently. And so we will get together and chat about the stuff we do with our adult lives here, and also the few games we do get to play.
I like that when we do actually get together, it's not about video games. I saw you this weekend.
Yeah, we got together this weekend. Did we play or really talk about games at all that entire time?
I don't think we talked about games more than 2 minutes. Probably we talked about it when other people at the tailgate asked us about the BattleTech interview, which was fantastic, and I want to thank them again.
Yeah, that was a really cool time, and I really, really thank the PR guy that put us in touch with them and them for being so gracious with their time. It was a pleasure.
As a distraction from our current topic, I think it went well.
I agree. Yeah. It came out really good. You couldn't even tell where there was a cut in the sound.
No one could know. Now I have to cut this.
Oh, no.
All right,
secret sauce.
Back on track, back on track. We were at a football game.
Yeah, and we went to a tailgate, by which I mean we made our own tailgate and did that in a parking lot of a football stadium. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but it wasn't NFL like it had been. We went to the Aztecs versus Stanford College game, back where we used to watch Chargers versus Broncos games.
Yeah, the ye olde Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, a now purely college football stadium.
I don't actually know. Is it still called Qualcomm, or is it actually like SDSU Stadium?
No. I think Qualcomm still owns the names for, you know, a while. We'll see what they choose to call it after that license expires, whenever that is.
It sounded like people were exploring possibly turning it into a college facility full-time, not just for football, but other things as well around there.
Yeah, and there's definitely been talk of the college getting that land and redeveloping it and doing some... The college would like to build, like, you know, dorm rooms and college buildings and stuff there, but, you know, who knows what that will happen. But we attended a football game of San Diego State University versus Stanford, and that was a heck of a lot of fun.
I think except for the actual outcome of the game for some people, including myself, it was disappointing. But I think that overall, it was a fun experience. The drive home was rough, especially because we didn't have exciting things to talk about in our car. But,
yeah.
You know, I don't blame the drive for that or, or anybody at the tailgate. It was a lot of fun up until then.
But we have to talk about the most exciting occurrence in the entire game, Andrew. And that was the blackout.
Oh, yeah. I'd never experienced that before in a professional stadium.
I was going to ask if you had ever seen anything like this before. I've never seen something like that.
I've seen it on purpose during fireworks in Angel Stadium, where they shut down everything. But I've never seen it during play that I can recall at a professional venue for sports. I've seen it on TV. But, yeah, somebody, you know, bumped the light switch or whatever. And then, you know, those sodium
lights.
Three quarters
of the lights in the stadium went out.
Sure, and they're the huge sodium lamp whatevers, so they take like 30 minutes to reboot.
Yep. And so they were off, and we were all just kind of sitting around in the dark while the players and the coaches on the field were just like, what's going on? that was really surreal. It was like being at that Super Bowl game where the lights went out for a good half hour or whatever. If you recall, there was a Super Bowl where that happened.
I didn't until you mentioned it, but now I do.
Yeah, it was the, I want to say it was the Ravens versus the 49ers that year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep, and the lights just went out for no discernible reason. And it was a pretty similar situation where, like, then the network had to scramble to fill airtime, just like we had to scramble to fill time in our, like, seats that were now all of a sudden more lit up than the seats that were out near the field.
Wow. Yeah, what an experience.
Yeah.
It was strange, but it was fun. All of it was fun.
I think our seats were great. The people in the, you know, the stands were cheering appropriately most of the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a great time. I think it was, I would say I had more fun than some of the professional games that we have been to there.
You probably did.
Well, I didn't have a horse in the football team race, so that helped.
Right. Wow. Well, it was still a good time. Thanks to Stephanie for putting that together, obviously.
Yeah.
She organized it superbly so that there was really no question and everyone just had a really, really amazing time. I'm sure we'll talk about some football later today as well because NFL season is actually in full swing. But we're here ostensibly to talk about video games before we talk about the things that annoy us.
Okay. I have an idea of how that NFL segment later will go.
Of our final segment of the day.
All right.
I noticed a change today that I want to talk about on Amazon.com.
The website Amazon.com?
Well, I mean, a policy on Amazon.com. So, yes, part of the code of Amazon.com, but you know what I mean.
Okay.
Do you have Prime?
I do have Prime.
One of the best deals of Prime is 20% off of new releases.
Yeah. I don't actually use that particular benefit that much, it turns out.
Okay.
But that is a cool benefit, and sure. Like one of their things that Amazon has been doing to compete with the similar kinds of deals that GameSpot and GameStop and Best Buy offer for people that pre-order.
So when the deal was first released, it was 20% off of pre-ordered items. And for the 2 weeks post-game release, it was 20% off as well. So you could like read reviews and say, oh, wow, that game's not any good, so I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, that was the best part of it.
And so for people like myself, we had kind of like that amazing moment where we thought, finally, someone out there is taking our side and saying, pre-orders are silly. I'm actually not getting this game until it's going to come out.
Extend that pre-order price till after the game is out.
Right. Let people actually buy games on their merits. But I noticed a few weeks ago, I ordered some Amiibos, JJ, and those used to be covered under the Amazon.com video game 20% off price.
Okay.
And I was about to order another game that had just released. I can't remember what it was. And it was also not 20% off. And I thought, this is strange. And lo and behold, accessory style things like Amiibos and the extension past release date have now been removed from their deal.
Hmm.
So if you know, as of today, I discovered this again today because the new Metroid game, special edition with soundtrack is back in stock at Amazon and it, you know, released last week. So I thought, oh, I'll go on and get it for 20%. Oh, wait. We're post-release. Full price.
That's kind of a bummer.
It is a real bummer, and I don't understand the logic behind it. Maybe I understand the logic of removing things like Amiibos.
Yeah, so that was going to be my point, is like if they are saying, oh, okay, well, we're taking these accessories like Amiibos and controllers or whatever off, like, all right, I can get with that.
Totally behind that.
Yeah, you know, the removing like what is, you know, more or less, I assume, the best part of the deal by letting you buy it for the, you know, discounted pre-order price after release. That really sucks.
It really changes the math, doesn't it?
I mean, no, because not for me, since I wasn't using it before anyway.
Sure, sure.
But it does, it definitely does change the math, I think. Like, in terms of, like, should you, if you're buying Amazon Prime for this benefit, that's not going to be a good use of Amazon Prime.
No, well, I really hope you're not, because there are good things on also. It, like Grand Tour for free, or right.
Like free all of Amazon Video, free shipping on Amazon products, free subscriptions to Twitch Prime, and a bunch of free stuff through that. And
sure.
So, you know, I mean, there are good things to get with Amazon Prime, but, like, yeah, that does kind of suck for
it's
sure.
It's interesting you mentioned Twitch. I wonder if they can use this as leverage to, like, get their Twitch players early access to games to review them or something, or stream them early, or say, hey, you know, we're not giving that discount after release anymore, so maybe you can let the game out early into these people so they can show people it to buy it. Or,
I mean, you know, Twitch does sell games, right?
This is true.
You can buy things through Twitch, so there is some kind of brand synergy there. And also, maybe you can correct me here, but I believe that Amazon 20% discount does not extend to digital games either.
No, it does
not. Only
not.
Physical products.
Right,
so you have to
exactly.
buy discs.
Yes, yes.
Or cartridges, or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
And that kind of sucks, because I don't really buy so many physical discs these days.
Well, you might be if you're getting a Switch at the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely that consideration. But, you know, I would not want to buy discs for that thing if I could just download them, although it sounds like there isn't actually much download space on that thing, so.
As per most Nintendo items, you might as well get a free memory stick to store your game, right? Because the price for download is you buying a memory stick and storing it yourself, or paying 20% off of that price and getting a memory stick for them to store it for you. You just have to find a place to put it.
Yeah. Nintendo, man, why? What are they doing, man?
I don't know. Shut down your production line and give everybody 20% off, right?
Yeah, just like, you know, come on, get that stuff together.
Oh, well.
I don't know. That's really...
Well, yeah, I've been trying to keep up on a promise, which means I don't have a ton of gaming to report this week. I spent a lot of energy, obviously, getting that interview all set up for the last time we were together. So I just... I've been playing some Bravely Default again, finally.
Yes.
I just finished Chapter 3, so we're on to Chapter 4 of 5.
Okay.
And I've been making pretty swift progress. I seem to be leveled equivalent to my difficulty, so things are not too hard.
Nice. So you're starting to get to the end of it now. Are you enjoying the story?
I am, though it hasn't really developed in the sense that I feel like much story is happening, more than just like travel to these four places and encounter enemy people and find out about them, and not really much about yourself.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There's.
I have a feeling that Chapter 5 will be where everything comes to a head.
Right. There's some stuff that goes on in the last couple chapters of that game for sure. So I will be interested to see how you feel about them when you get there.
Yeah.
I have been doing some backlog looking through, as well as some newer stuff. So I've got a couple gaming related things here. I played through some of the Trails of Cold Steel is the name of that game in the series of games which I have recommended on this podcast before, that is called The Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky.
Oh man, it's been a little while since we talked about them.
Yeah. So Trails in the Sky is this, The Legend of Heroes : Trails in the Sky are like, it is a game series that sort of has individual arcs. The Trails in the Sky arc has three parts. I have played the first two of three. The third part is also out, but I'm waiting for the sales to happen, because I think it will probably get an all right discount.
Speaking of sales.
Yeah. And there's a second arc that is out called The Trails of Cold Steel, and they all take place in the same world in a contemporary time. So you get, like, you know, this one is in a different country. And then supposedly in Japan, there's a third series that only has two parts that is not translated yet, but it takes place in the third country, right? And so you see these references to the various characters and things going on in the world between the various games that sort of you can place, oh, well, this just happened. Okay, so I know this is kind of like around this time frame in this other game. And like, here's what those people were doing then. And like, you hear about, oh, there's this big, you know, war going on over in this land. And like, oh, I remember that. I played through that in this other game. And like, it's all sort of, you know, like a big event happens about like most of the way through that game. And you're like, oh, that big event is actually, you know, like completely explained what happened, because they don't really tell you that it just happens and everyone, you know, like the newspaper comes out and everyone freaks out because like, oh my God, are we going to go to war or whatever? And, the townsfolk and everyone are very scared, and you actually play through those events in one of those other arcs. And so it's all kind of like weaving the story together across these multiple games. Across all these, these RPGs, of which are, let's say, not short games.
In a way that is impactful to your understanding of the story, or in a way that's kind of tertiary, like, oh, that's a cool reference.
So, I mean, a lot of it is reference, right? Because, like, this country is on one side of the continent, that country is on the other side. Like, they have trains and, like, kind of slow airships, right? There's not, like, a lot of, you know, you're not, like, jumping over there. And, like, the people aren't going to show up in your game, because if they did, right, you would have seen them go there, right? So, like, all that stuff definitely is taken into account, like, where are these characters during this time frame? And, like, how have they, you know, moved in the time frame since that game ended or whatever? But the stories of all the people, like, and I talked about this before when we talked about these games, but every townsperson in that game has a story arc. And you won't know. It's not like it's a quest to go find that story out, right? Like this wife and her husband are having, you know, troubles at home. And like, if you go and talk to them in between every major event, there's a new update on that little side story playing out between them or not. And then if you come and talk to them later, the dispute will still have been resolved. It did not involve you. You weren't there. You just walked into their house and talked to them, right?
Huh. Okay.
So it's like it gives you this like sense of a world that exists around you all the time, because all these stories play out regardless of whether you, the main character, go over and bother to talk to them or not, right? These people have their own lives. You're not actually involved in the lives of this random town person unless you want to be.
Unlike the old BioWare style games where you have to click through, like your follower in your encampment doesn't progress unless you start to have those discussions with them.
And so, like, there are still parts of the story that are like that, right? Like, your main party members or whatever are, you know, like, there are parts of the story where you have to talk to certain people in order to advance the story. But as you advance the story, tertiary people and even some of your own party members have their own side life outside of being with you. And that stuff evolves, whether you find out about it or not, right? Like, there's one player who is in a chess club. And his chess club meets and has a tournament, and there's a result from that tournament. Whether you attend any of those events or talk to that guy at all, it's still going to happen, right? Like, if you talk to him at the end of the game, having not talked to him at all before that, you will find out the results of that chess tournament. So like, it's a cool way to sort of build your immersion in this world. Hmm. And because the reason I had gone back to some of these games is that I found out they added this feature, which is really awesome, called Turbo Mode.
Say, like, let me guess.
Okay.
Turbo Mode, express leveling, as well as more powerful, like, characters. Like, when you level one level, they level two.
No, not quite. It is a feature that they added into these games through a new, nice new configuration tool that it actually lets you set the multiplier, and it just makes the game, while you're holding it down, run that many times faster. So like, if you have to go run from this side of the map to the other side of the map to complete a quest or whatever, you can only set it when the game starts up and not while it's running. But then you just hold down, in this case, the right trigger, which is never used for anything else in the game by default. And then your character runs at like 6x speed across the screen, all the way over to the other side, so you can talk to whoever you need to, or, you know, fetch that treasure chest or whatever.
Awesome. So it's literally just fast forward.
Yes. And it works in cutscenes.
Does it work in combat?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Even better, in combat, it skips all the animations. So if you just hold down the trigger, it skips the animations of all your attacks, it skips the animations of all the spells, and it skips all the level up screens and stuff afterwards. So it just, you know, pops on, you see the number fly off, and it says end of battle. And then if you get a level up, like one of your characters levels up, you get a screen that shows that they leveled up for like a half a second on the screen, and it's gone.
Because there's not really much you can do, right? So it doesn't really matter. Why spend the time on it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and you'd and obviously it disengages as soon as you let go of the thing. So if you want to watch that stuff, or you want, like, you a cutscene comes on and you were fast-forwarding, you can stop and watch the cutscene. Or if there's a slow panning shot in a cutscene, you can fast-forward through that part. And then when people start talking, you can stop. It's a wonderful, cool thing. And it probably cuts the playtime needed to complete one of these games like in half or less. It's amazing.
Why isn't this part of every RPG?
I don't know. But they, after releasing it in this new PC version of Cold Steel, they went and ported it back to the Trails in the Sky games.
Ooh, so you're waiting still.
So the old games, now that I've already, you know, finished before this existed, now have this functionality. And it's awesome. So people that have not played those games, which I highly suggest that you do because they're amazing, go back and take use of this built-in feature in the game.
Your playtimes have now been cut in half, which means it's even better of a game for your purposes that JJ's been saying.
And they are facilitating you to do the thing that I think is the coolest thing in this game, is going around and talking to all the various people and finding out about their little mundane details of their lives.
Because it costs you no time.
In between every single event that happens, yeah.
Nice.
So that's a really, really awesome update. And anyone who has not played those games should do so. They are amazing.
Sweet, dude.
And in more recent gaming news, a Kickstarter game that I had backed a while back has now finally reached the end of its kickstarting and is out for real.
Oh, wow. They finished kickstarting recently and they're out, or they finished Kickstarter ago?
They finished the Kickstarter, ended like years ago, and they were in early access for a while, but now they have hit complete full release.
All right.
Divinity Original Sin 2.
Oh, wow. I remember the original one was almost 6-7 years ago?
Maybe not quite that long, but not that far off. I would say, yeah, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
But, you know, after that finished, they took some time. They made an enhanced version of that, which fixed a lot of stuff and gave that enhanced version to all the Kickstarter backers for free.
Okay.
They did a console version of that and then kind of went dark for a bit and then came up with a Kickstarter for this game several years ago. And now it is out and it is really cool.
Oh, you already booted it up.
I downloaded it and booted it up. I did not play during the early access period.
I think that's probably a wise decision in general.
Yeah, you know, I didn't want my, like, opinions of whatever the game would become to be tainted by the versions of the skills and stuff that they had.
I think that a game like that, where you're playing the game as the beta, right? Like, we've been talking about the BattleTech beta a lot, and we're not playing the game. We're playing a portion of functionality. We're enjoying a system that is engaged in the game, but the game is more about the universe and the things you have to fulfill and your missions and all that sort of stuff,
right?
Versus what we get. But Divinity, it's kind of like, well, what are you going to get to play? You get to play the game. So are you going to want to play it again after you play early access and you spend that much time on it?
Yeah. So the hook this time is that there is 4-player co-op through the entire main quest.
How's that even possible?
You have 4 people and they have computers and you connect them up, you know, using computer stuff.
I thought it was more, it's not very Diablo-y, is it?
No. I mean, the game, the combat in the game is turn-based, so no, it's not.
So are we going to run into please wait a lot in the middle of just like basic combat?
So I am not entirely sure how they handle it, but from all I have heard is that it is handled very well. If they are engaged in a if some of your party members are engaged in combat somewhere else, you do not necessarily need to be involved in the turn-based kind of style of that combat going on over there while you're off doing something on the other side of the island or whatever.
Oh, okay, but if you you're not all part of the same party.
Well, you are, but you don't have to work together. The game allows, apparently, for a lot of... It is co-op in the sense that you are working together to solve the main quest, but it is not necessarily cooperative. You can definitely be competitive cooperative. Like, I can rush to complete this quest first before you and take the rewards and not share them with the party, or backstab my party members and kill their quest vendors or things like that. There's all sorts of shenanigans that the game allows from like a role-playing standpoint.
That's awesome.
To the point that it even includes a dungeon master mode.
Where, say like, what?
Yeah, so where you can drop in to a, you know, kind of an empty map and place characters and monsters and, you know, do work to set it up as though it was like a module for your daily D&D game or whatever. Monthly, maybe.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah, I have not checked that that part out yet, but it sounds like the tools are quite robust, albeit, you know, maybe take a lot of work. So it would probably be a little more work than your average dungeon master would be doing for the you know, the monthly role play session.
I'd imagine, but also that you'd play through it a lot faster than your monthly play session.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, it can be experienced by four people. So you have the, you know, a sort of analog at least to that. But, you know, then also you can share those online and people can download them and play, you know. So you're not necessarily aiming just for your local play group. You're probably would be aiming for a wider audience there.
I see. So you're kind of, it's almost like developer mode.
Yeah, it's like, you know, build a campaign kind of, or build a, you know, short series of encounters or something. So that's a really cool feature that has not been around in a long time for games like this on the computer. So far, I like the way they have done with the writing. I've only done the very beginning part of the game, but they do a clever thing in that they have voiced characters and a voiced narrator, but they don't do, when you select your choice, you know, like they have dialogue trees, right? You know, you're talking to a townsperson in town. You have like four options to select to say back to them, right? The options are listed not as the words that your character will speak, but as the like role playing thing where you put like asterisks around it, and then like kind of what you mean to say in between here. Do you know what I mean? So it'll be like the narrator will say like your character awakes on the, or you know, like your character's name, because you can choose characters that have names and he'll say them, or you can make your own character and he'll say you, and you say you awake on the deck of this ship and you're looking around. And then you have like three responses. One is which like remark that you feel like you have been here before. Uh-huh. The second one is notice that this ship is a special type of ship. And what does that mean? And then the third one is, you know, call aloud to see if anyone else is around. But it doesn't actually say what your character will say. It's just like what you're thinking, yeah, or what your action would be.
Sure. And sometimes it feels like every answer gives the same answer.
No, not necessarily. Yeah, there's definitely cases where the choice you make doesn't make a difference in the outcome.
That's, I think, right? What like, I mean is like, you know, angry response or normal response both sound like same response, even though the words are different and the response from the NPC is always the same.
But more along the lines that, you may not get like the same dialogue tree through the talk with the person or whatever, but you get it gives you more of a sense of being that character right? Because you're role playing as like, what would this, you know, the person I chose as my leader is a lizard person, and he's like an exiled prince. And so like you have a bunch of options and it's like, which one of these would he say, right? As opposed to what would I say as myself?
Sure. Okay.
So you're not really doing the self insert thing. It allows you to more easily not do the self insert thing unless you just want to do that. Right.
Right. Like, yeah, sure. Either you play yourself or you play a character. It makes it easier to play a character. That's cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you choose these, you know, these voiced characters that have like their own backgrounds or whatever, and every character does get some like background traits. In some of the dialogues, there'll be a little option. It's not even an option, but like some of the dialogue options will have a little tag next to them that you can only say because your character has like lived that life or was a part of that world or whatever. Like, oh, this lizard guy used to be a prince. So he has an option for like a noble person would say, oh, I'm not going to, you know, talk to this person because they're beneath me. So it's like, you know, don't deign to notice this common person over here. Or you have the like, you know, option because you're a scholar where this guy is reading a book and asks you a question. You can be like, well, actually, this guy's treatise on this is terrible and here's why. Or, you know, you have those kinds of like historical and like, you know, background related tasks, right? Or options in the dialogue as well.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So far it's really cool. I like it. The combat is, like I said, it was turn-based. And pretty interesting. Like they have like a action point system where each action you do costs so many points. And you start off with a certain number based on your statistics that you can then raise as time goes on. And then you know, if you want to use your special skill to charge the enemy, it costs 3 points. And if you want to swing your weapon, it costs 2. And if you want to move around, it costs X number of points based on how far you go or whatever. And then it's their turn or the next person's turn. And there's a, you know, turn order at the top of the screen. It's pretty easy to get through, you know, like to figure out, and get going. I hear that the combinations of stuff you can do later in the game are actually quite varied, and like ridiculous. There's an entire skill tree about polymorphing. So I'm excited to find out what that means.
Yeah, I'm excited to find out what that means too.
I know one of the first things you can do in that tree is give your character wings and then they can just fly wherever they want.
What?
You get a teleport skill apparently almost immediately, shortly into the game, and you can use that to teleport around. Which also, to be fair, you could do in the first game, and it was insanely broken, just like you would think that it is.
Sure, sounds broken.
but I think it's intentionally insanely broken.
Yeah, you have to get
because
there.
Yeah. They did something else, which I think you might have an opinion on, in terms of the combat.
Uh-oh.
Like the mechanics of how it works. You have your health pool, right, you know, based on your statistics. And then you also have armor. And there's two types of armor. There's both physical armor and magical armor. And as long as your physical or magical armor is above 0, you can't be hit with any crowd-controlling effects. So you can't be stunned. You can't be set on fire. You can't, like, you know, any debuffs will not affect your character until it depletes the armor based on what type it is, right?
Whoa.
So if they're trying to stun you with a physical stun, it won't work until your physical armor is down. If they're using a magic, like, you know, polymorph on you, it won't work until your magical armor is down.
It seems like it would prevent a lot of the things that I hate about Japanese games, RPG games especially, where, oh, you have to learn the fight because, like, the first time you play against this character, you don't know that the first turn after he drops his shield, you need to have your characters in guard or your whole party dies.
Yeah. So I'm very interested to see how that goes. I mean, you know, I did not play very far into it, and I had, like, 4 points of physical armor or something. Very low number. But, you know, it lets you do stuff like, oh, there's a patch of fire on the ground between myself and where I want to be. Well, like, I still have this armor. I can just, like, run through that fire, and I'll be fine. And then I get to be over on the other side of this field where I wanted to be, you know?
Yeah.
And that is a big difference from the first game where you know, the most important thing in the first game was, you know, can I immediately teleport someone into battle, and then that person can immediately stun everyone around them, and then, you know, everyone can, you know, dogpile on the first person they see and just sort of take the enemies out one by one while controlling them.
Wow.
It sounds like that's a lot harder to do in this game, so it should present quite a bit of challenge, and I hear there are some fights in this game that have gotten quite difficult. So,
because of this.
Yeah, so because, you know, if the enemies have these armors too, right?
Oh.
And so if I have, you know, if I have 4 points of armor, but, you know, like 50 health or whatever, well, if the enemy has 20 points of armor,
yeah, yeah,
and 6 health, well, firstly, if there's a spell that bypasses armor, that's then amazing against that character. But also, then it becomes really hard to stop that character from getting to act and, like, hit you in the face with his giant mace or whatever.
Sure.
So it definitely adds some interesting strategic depth. And then since the physical and the magical armor are separate, right? If I'm casting a spell at a guy who doesn't have physical armor, right? But he does have magical. Well, like, maybe I shouldn't do that then, because it's not going to really, you know, it'll take his magical armor down, but maybe I need to, you know, tactically rearrange my attack orders or something so that the magic armor has a, you know, or that the physical, you can take advantage of the physical weakness as opposed to the magical weakness, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to diving into it. It sounds like it's got a lot of good strategic stuff in there, and I am excited to try that out. I don't know that I'm going to mess around with much of the co-op stuff. I didn't in the first game either, but that was two-player co-op. So, yeah, it sounds awesome. Divinity Original Sin 2, check it out. It looks like it should be really good. It had like 75,000 concurrent players or something the week it was released. So that's really good for a brand new title in an RPG series. Yeah,
especially in an RPG series and one that came from a Kickstarter. So congrats to them. I had a whole bunch of articles I was going to ask you your opinions on. I think we'll do that next week.
Okay, rad.
I think we'll do like a whole like a news and social commentary episode next week. What do you feel?
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay, we can't get out of this without talking about the new football season that started, the NFL and fantasy football. But first, I think that we should hit people with some contact info and some social medias.
Yeah, I think that if people want to tell us about their fantasy football teams, I will actually read this. And you can send those lists to podcast@wewergamers.com. And that's our email address right there. And if you want to talk about your fantasy football on our Facebook page, you can do that. And that's facebook.com/WeWereGamers. And you hit like, follow that page, and get all of our podcasts and other tidbits of interesting information we find throughout the weeks. We're also on Twitter @WeWereGamers and Instagram @WeWereGamers. All of our good social medias are WeWereGamers, and hit us up on any of those. Like, review, subscribe, all that stuff.
Yeah, reviews and subscriptions are really great on the iTunes or the Stitchers or what have you. And now it's time for what I think that was christened 2 weeks ago, and I finally get to unveil by a friend of the pod, Michael, Rantasy Football.
Oh, Rantasy Football. I like it. That is a good title.
It's time. I'm not doing so great.
No?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if the NFL's doing worse or better than me, but I don't seem to be accomplishing much in two of my leagues. But I think the more important thing to talk about is not that I'm in two leagues and sucking in both of them. It's that you're in four.
I'm in four fantasy football leagues this year. That's correct.
Too many.
It feels like too many. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think you're right. But on the other hand, I don't really want to quit any of them, so I don't know what to do.
Okay.
It would be helpful to me if some of them somehow imploded and like just decided not to meet again next year.
Sure.
But I'm not going to contribute to that because I like all of them and I like the people in all of them. So it's a lot. I will say that the most competitive one seems like my work league. Which was for long time listeners of the podcast, is a auction league. So there's no, the draft that normally goes, you know, sort of front to back and back to front in the typical snake-like fashion. It is just it's an auction. And so you pay what the price the market will bear. And that is it makes things very interesting. It also makes the draft take a really long time.
Yeah, sure. As people decide what they're willing to pay for every single player.
Yeah, the online system does kind of move it forward. You only get a certain amount of time to outbid or whatever. But yeah, it definitely takes quite a bit of time. But I'm really enjoying football this year because also in three of my four leagues, Andrew, I picked up Kareem Hunt. And so that has made my year really good.
If only.
Yeah. Right. If only all of us were smart enough to pick up Kareem Hunt in every league.
I think that you mean lucky enough. I mean, a lot of people had them on his board, right?
Yeah. I mean, I drafted him. All of my leagues drafted after the guy he was replacing got hurt, right? And so in that respect, I did not get hosed by drafting the guy who was injured. So that's good. Is he? He did get injured in the preseason before the actual season started. So, but, you know, I happened to pick him up because he was there. And then, you know, when I was doing some of my other drafts later, I was like, well, I got this guy in this league. Why don't I grab him over here? And here we are.
I specifically tried to avoid having players in both leagues, and it didn't work out in either one.
In that you mean now you just have bad players?
I have two teams that are bad and not one team that is good or anything like that, you know?
Mm. Well, yeah, again, I didn't try to draft all the same players. I just have like one or two are the same. Yeah.
But, yeah, my receiving core in our league is not so good. Like really, really not so good.
That's rough. What is your, give me some, the names, a couple of players.
Terrell Pryor.
Mm.
Cooper Kupp.
Cup is pretty good, though, isn't he?
No, he had one good game out of two.
Okay. He had one good game out of two.
Devontae Parker.
Okay, yeah.
Jordan Matthews.
Not hot.
Golden Tate.
Yikes. Golden Tate usually does all right.
Yeah, he did all right last week. Not so well this week. I'm just not feeling so good. And my reach down for Christian McCaffrey has netted me at 9 points for the whole season. Watching Dak Prescott play every week is like watching 2 points for three and a half quarters, and then all of a sudden you have 19, so that's nice and stressful.
Let me tell you about a player named Jimmy Graham. He has, let me count, 0.6 points for the whole season.
Okay. Most of us could have seen that coming.
Seattle is not that bad.
They don't use tight ends, though. They didn't last year when they got Jimmy Graham.
He put up more respectable numbers than that. He put up better than zero numbers. But, yeah, so that's very depressing.
My only claim to feel like I know anything about what I'm doing right now is that during the draft, you told me, Kobe Fleener, why are you drafting that guy? He was on New Orleans last year, and they sucked. And I thought, nah.
He was on New Orleans last year, and he sucked.
Yeah, there's no way he's going to suck 2 years in a row. And I've got some decent points from him, at least.
It helps that Willie Snead is suspended. and who knows if he will maintain that production. But you know what? Good for you. I'm happy. I'm happy that your reach there in the tight end position paid off. Unlike your foolish reach for Christian McCaffrey because he was a Stanford player that you liked.
Oh, well.
Yes. You know, I was not so high on him.
We never did our full rosters, did we? We did that last year, and I don't know if it's worth mentioning at all.
We could just go through it real quick. You already just said like half of yours anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Just do the starters, maybe.
All right. Dak Prescott. Terrell Pryor. I'll call Jordan Matthews a starter, I guess, technically. Melvin Gordon, Christian McCaffrey, Kobe Fleener, Golden Tate, Theoretic, Blair Walsh, Buffalo defense. I will mention I put Jarvorius Allen on the team, who I, of course, sat on the bench for his 15-point game this week. So that felt good.
Bummer. So my in the league with you, I have Derek Carr. Antonio Brown, Demaryius Thomas, Todd Gurley, Kareem Hunt, Tyler Eifert, Jordan Howard, also oops. Brandon Marshall, also oops.
but at least your first five players make up for, you know, an entire team.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt Prater and the Cincinnati defense. You know, look, I'm winning this week, so I'm not complaining.
Derek Carr was a target of mine in both leagues and just
I sniped
did not
him
happen.
From you. I sniped him from
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you did. It was pretty ugly.
But you know, like, yeah, I have a good, like, top half of the roster. The bottom half from the tight end position and the flex positions down is not hot. So we'll see what I can do there. You know, I'm doing okay. I will be 2-0 in that league. Overall this year, I went 3-1 first week, and this week I'm going 50-50.
Okay.
So I have a generally winning record across all leagues and all games.
See, if you get in enough leagues, you feel like you're winning every week. But to me, I'm kind of like, I don't want to do that much work anymore.
Yeah. I can say that one of the leagues, I have the highest score that I have ever seen in a fantasy football game. I have 174 points. And that is a lot.
I've never heard that amount.
Yeah.
That must be an 8-team league.
Nope. It is a 12-team league.
What?
Yep. But I happened to pick people, all of whom got, like, let's see. Kareem Hunt got 20 points. Travis Kelce got 20 points. Gurley got 20 points. Devonta Freeman got 20 points. Emmanuel Sanders got 20 points. And Carson Wentz got like 25 points. And then, you know, plus some other people in there. And a defense that scored over their starting value as well.
Boo.
Yeah. So that was a great week for that league. I expect they will only be downhill from there. Note that my quarterback is Carson Wentz. I drafted Andrew Luck in that league, so it's not looking
Carson
so hot.
Carson Wentz isn't a bad quarterback. I just feel like it's too bad that he's on like
the
Eagles.
Yeah. 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 His stat line isn't that great, but luckily it is a 6-point passing touchdowns. And, you know, he got 2 TDs and then also somehow randomly had 50 rushing yards, which let's just take those away because he'll never hit that again.
So, all right, fair enough.
So
I'm not feeling up to full snuff, so my rant mode is kind of like light today, but there's fantasy football. And we already did all our social media plugs. Social media plugs. Oh, boy.
Yeah, are you excited to have the surety of a Sunday plan planned out for the rest of, you know, the next several weeks?
What do you mean?
Maybe you don't have this where like you're going to like dedicate your Sundays to watching football for the next several weeks.
Do you have that?
I'm kind of trying to have that.
Nice.
I mean, it's not necessarily going to be true across the board.
I can't plan like that with kidlets running around. I wish I could. It is my eventual life goal to be able to sit down and do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know for multiple weeks, in 2 weeks, we'll be at a wedding on a Sunday.
Yeah, you know, obviously travel.
You know,
and control,
when you
so.
Sometimes this season we're going to be up at Stanford for football games on Saturdays, so it's hard to say that I have the goal to sit down in front of a football thing. And again, we don't have the cables. So,
well, you know, most of those games are on Sunday, not on cable. So you're lucky with that.
Right. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's just it is nice, to have like at least for me, a schedule that I can plan on. Most Sundays we're going to be sitting here. I'm going to watch some football.
It's like the stabilizing force, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like, hey, we're in the fall season now.
The fall has hit. It's cold outside, and all we have to do is wake up.
It's not cold outside. It's like 90 degrees.
Yeah, well, okay.
and like, yell at the TV when they throw it to the wrong freaking guy, and gosh darn it.
Fair enough, and I think that's the perfect point to end.